Jonathan Hood, weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
There's blast deep into the night, and a two-run homer for Baez.
We're getting a 13-yard gain here on fourth down. And right now, not looking good. Trubisky's going to run it, and he is going to get a first down. How about Trubisky to the 42-yard line? Oh, my goodness.
Bentley play action. So Jake Bentley chased. The Chef Smith,
Roquan Smith, he's the highlight show of this defense.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam. McClair inside Payne, 1-2. He did it. He did it. Steamboat got him up. McClair has done it. McClair has done it.
And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up and welcome in. You're listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, weeknights here on ESPN 1000. Open phone lines for you at 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is the telephone number. Have you hit me up on Twitter? Are you following me on Twitter? Twitter.com, tweet J Hood. Are you following me on Snapchat? Snap J Hood. I need more friends on Snapchat. Follow me on Snapchat, Snap J Hood. You follow me on Snapchat, I will give you a follow back guaranteed. Don't forget about the Under the Hood podcast. We got something fresh for you coming after the show is done. A fresh mailbag for you. A lot of your questions about sports and non-sports and mild sauce. Yeah, all part of the mailbag edition of the Under the Hood podcast. So if you are a podcast listener, you're listening to this on podcast. Hello, welcome to Hour 3. Don't forget the Under the Hood with John the Hood podcast. Just look for my name. Jonathan Hood, look for the Chicago flag, and that's where you're at, right there, the Under the Hood podcast. Every episode of Under the Hood is right there for you, as well as special interviews, all part of the Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood podcast here on ESPN 1000. We will have our NBA roundtable with Chris Bleck of the Best of 1000, heard Sunday mornings with Adam Abdallah here on ESPN 1000, and Nick Friedel will be with us as well. Nick covers the NBA for ESPN.com. Chris, Nick, and I will be the combination that you will hear on draft night next Thursday right here on ESPN 1000 at 6 p.m. Next Thursday, we'll have our 2018 NBA draft coverage. Nick, Chris, and I will have that for you right here on ESPN 1000, so we'll talk to the guys and get their thoughts about the NBA draft and some of the NBA issues. Let me just say this. When it comes to LeBron James being as polarizing as he is, here's what you're going to hear between now and, what is it, June 28th, 29th, when he's got to decide if he's going to opt in or opt out. You're going to hear and read so much about where LeBron James is going. And the one thing is that you and I both really don't know. I don't know. You don't know. And the thing is that for those that don't like him, you still want to find out where he's going. It's kind of, that's what makes it polarizing. He is John Cena. That's who he is. He's John Cena in a Cavaliers uniform. I will tell you, and I will stick to my guns with this, and we'll talk to Chris and Nick about this in just a moment. I really believe that he has two choices. And neither choice, by the way, the choice that I'm going to give you still does not get him an NBA championship. And before we even get into the two choices, let me just say this. It is up to LeBron James to try to figure out what's best for him. What is the next thing for him? He's already won three NBA championships. He has broken so many records. He was able to bring a NBA championship to his hometown of Cleveland. He was able to go away for a while after he didn't think that Cleveland had a chance to win. He made his decision to go to Miami to play with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. And so he has three championship rings. He's a Hall of Famer if he walked away from the game today. I wonder what is in his mind about what's the next step for him. You've heard guest on this program talk about how, well, you know, he's really chasing a ghost. He's chasing Michael Jordan to be able to win six championships. He's in year 15. He's not going to win six championships. If he does, it'll be with him in a David West role or a Kendrick Perkins role where at year 20, he's part of a championship team. But I think that if he does win three more championships, especially maybe the championship five or championship six, it might be because of other players, not necessarily because of LeBron James. He's the greatest player that we have in the NBA today. There's no doubt about that. However, this whole conversation about where he's going, to me, it's only two choices. I've talked to some people, but I've had my own hypothesis about how I look at LeBron James. And I think that either he's going to stay in Cleveland because he has full autonomy of what happens in Cleveland. Because no matter what you think, LeBron James and how he reacts to how the team is going, the ebb and flow of that season is going, LeBron James has something to say about it. He's going to talk to Kobe Altman, the general manager, about it. He's going to talk to the ownership about it. You know that he has some power, some swing in that organization, right? The other choice would be Los Angeles because he has a home there. Now, we have heard stories from Gary Payton saying that LeBron's oldest son has enrolled in a school in Los Angeles.
Anything can happen. I do. People don't look at it. They look at everything. His son just committed to Sierra Canyon, which is in the valley of L.A. That's where his son is going to go to school with Scottie Pippen's son and Kenyon Martin's son. So that's a move that they're going to make.
So that's Gary Payton that was on Black Sports Online with Robert Latall talking about LeBron James' son enrolling in Los Angeles. Okay, so with him enrolling in a school in Los Angeles doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to go there. He might enroll there, but maybe LeBron says, no, I'm going to stay in Cleveland. Let's go back to Cleveland. It's ultimately up to LeBron, but I know that his kids will have some say. Bobby Marks, former GM in the league, as well as a front office insider for ESPN, talked about realistic landing spots for LeBron.
I think we have to focus on three teams. It's Cleveland. He can return back 5 years, $205 million, but That roster will be restricted how they improve. They have the eighth pick in the draft, and that will be their likely free agent addition. We can talk about the Lakers. There is the clear path to go to Los Angeles with the possibility of maybe a Paul George or a Chris Paul to join him. They have little obstacles to create that path. They can get up to 60 to 65 million. And then there's Philadelphia. Can you go down and join Ben Simmons and Dario Saric and Joel Embiid? There's still some work to do in Philadelphia. They've got $27 million in room, so they're going to need to shed a contract. But those are the three teams I think we should focus on right now.
What does he do with his player option, towards that last week of June here? He's got to the 29th to opt in or out of the contract. I think if he opts in, I think that's probably a clear signal that there is some type of trade in the works for him to go to a team that does not have a cap space. If we're looking at, you know, the teams like Houston out there that we've talked about, maybe even San Antonio. I don't see Boston or Golden State. I know those have been mentioned this week here, but the landscape is not that clear. It's very different than 2016 when we had that cap spike and we had 28 out of 30 teams with room, and LeBron would be able to probably pick his team. I think he could still do that, but it's going to have help and probably some cooperation with Dan Gilbert to accommodate him to his next home if that's going to be the case.
So the thoughts there from Bobby Marks about realistic places for LeBron James to go. And when we hear the conversation about, well, you know, LeBron James has to continue to play because he's chasing ghosts, chasing championships, you know, I think it's not him chasing Jordan's ghosts. It's him trying to chase championships. And I don't know if those championships are available in anywhere besides Golden State at this point. Houston's right there. Boston's right there. But the thing is that for LeBron James in year 15, who looked terrific this past season, a lot of these spots that they're talking about, you can't win a championship in, even with LeBron James on it. And this shows you that one guy can't turn a team around. Kevin Durant, along with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, that unit has been together so long. So sure, that team seems to work very well, three championships in 4 years. It's not chasing Jordan's championships. It's trying to chase a championship and trying to find the best route for him. As you listen to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, glad you're with us. It's time for our roundtable discussion on the NBA free agency and the draft. These two will be my partners when it comes to the NBA draft on Thursday at 6 o'clock. You hear our coverage here on ESPN 1000, live from the Advocate Center. Chris Bleck and Nick Friedel. Chris Bleck from the Best of 1000, UIC Flames color analyst. He's with us here on ESPN 1000. Hello, Chris.
Jonathan, what's going on tonight?
You know what's going on because you know that Nick is on. Nick at Night is with us here on ESPN 1000. Nick Friedel covers the NBA for ESPN.com. Hello, Nick.
My friends, it's always good to be with you.
Well, it's a great conversation that we're going to have here because it stems from LeBron James. You know that as soon as the season was over, guys, that there was going to be this LeBron talk of where he's going to go. Chris, I'll ask you, do you have any more clarity of what you think LeBron could do here when he's got to make his decision at the end of the month?
I think the one thing that all the experts are saying is that LeBron gets to pick what he wants to do. Right, and that sounds obvious, but for all the teams that are out there, if he wants to go somewhere, teams will bend over backwards to make that situation work. I think the most obvious spot still in my head is Los Angeles, the Lakers, because of the cap space and the fact that they can lure a second star if that person is out there. I think trying to add LeBron to a team that is already almost contending, you're going to have to do so much cap manipulation to get LeBron onto your roster of, say, your Boston, Houston, San Antonio, that to me, the obvious choice for LeBron if he leaves Cleveland would be Los Angeles because he and a buddy, Paul George, can just or Chris Paul, can just say, hey, let's go here and let's see what we can do and what we can add on to this move right now without having to trade away a bunch of pieces just to land LeBron.
Nick, what do you think?
I agree with Chris. I think the easy decision for LeBron, guys, is to go to the Lakers and to be part of a historic franchise. But I look back to what Bobby Marks said in those sound bites there, Hoodie, which is, look, like we can sit here and go through every different possibility. I don't think there is a place, whether it's the Lakers, whether it's the Sixers, staying in Cleveland and redoing whatever part of the roster that you can. I don't believe that there is a place LeBron can go next season to go win a title because I think that if Golden State stays healthy, they're going to beat whoever it is, whether it's Houston coming at him again or LeBron on a new team. So there is always going to be a lot of intrigue with his future and where he lands. I don't see a clear spot for him. And that's why I believe that Cleveland is not being given enough of a chance right now because he can go back there for another year, try to shake up the roster, and be in a place where he knows his family is comfortable.
So, Chris, who do you think is the second best team in the NBA going into – again, we got free agency to get through. But after Golden State, who's second, the second best, the next team that could win an NBA championship?
I think it's hands down the Houston Rockets. I think there's a reason why we saw Golden State and Houston be the two best teams throughout the entire regular season. I think it's a reason why we saw the best series of the playoffs come down to the Rockets and the Warriors. And I think if you really look at the scope of what has happened over the last couple of years, Golden State has been so much better than everyone else. And the Cleveland team, when Kyrie was there, was right on par with them, and they could keep pace. And once Kyrie left, it diminished what Cleveland was doing, and we all know that, and we saw what happened in the finals. But the closest thing to what we've seen with Golden State is Houston, and I think going into next season, they're going to be the second-best team, assuming that Chris Paul re-signs there. But they have a 1-2 punch that almost took out the Warriors, and I think a lot of people kind of point to, hey, are the Warriors ruining the NBA? Has Joe Lacob in this mission to destroy the NBA? Is this bad for the league? That team almost lost in Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. So I think Houston is good enough. They are good enough to beat Golden State. They just didn't. And like I said last time when we talked on this very show, is Houston needs to bring everything back and just keep running this together because they have the pieces in place to beat the Warriors, and they're going to be the second-best team heading into next season.
Nick, the same question. Why isn't it the Celtics the best, second best team in the NBA?
Well, I think a lot of it is because you can't rely on Kyrie to stay on the floor, Hoodie. I mean, I love what Boston has done. I am a huge believer in Brad Stevens continuing to grow in his role as an NBA head coach. I mean, if he gets that team to play hard every night, they know what they're doing defensively. They're a very smart group, and they've got guys like Tatum and Brown who are only going to mature and get better. Having said all that, if you're relying on Kyrie Irving to stay on the floor, that's going to be difficult. And when you have the other teams coming at you the way Boston will in the East, as much as I like them, I'm just not sold that Kyrie can be healthy. And you know, Chris and I have gone back and forth on this for a while. I don't agree on Houston. I don't believe Houston's good enough, even if they're healthy all the way through, because I think that if Golden State is healthy, and people kind of forget that they missed Iguodala there at the end of that series, at the beginning of the finals, if he's healthy, they're probably up 3-1 in the Houston series. So, you know, you can go back and forth, and there's an argument either way, but I think that Golden State is so dominant right now that I don't see another team being able to knock them off.
Chris Black from the Best of 1000 Sunday mornings here on ESPN 1000. Nick Friedel covers the NBA for ESPN.com. Joins me, Jonathan Hood, on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. I've been saying a lot, you know, Chris and Nick, you know, when you start, you host these shows and you start seeing a theme and a trend, you start saying the same things over and over again. And so when it comes to the Golden State Warriors, the one thing I've been saying is, you know, there's no drama with the Warriors. I'm glad that there's no drama. That's the reason why they won a championship, is because they are harmonious. Until Bob Myers has had to say something at the parade. Oh, man.
I heard you tell Kevin Durant he can have whatever contract he wants next year.
Yeah, that was just for the media. He can't have anything like that at all.
Mid-level.
Yeah, mid-level, behind closed doors.
Because I think last year he told Steph he could have any contract he wants, too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, that was different. He's been here from the run, you know, the way before days. He's earned it.
Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, you guys can sit there. You're much taller than me. I'm going to stand in front of KD before his Warrior exit. I want to enjoy as much time with him as possible. Steph, we'll smooth Bob over later on. Any contract you want, Kev, I promise. Steph.
So not only Bob Myers, but also friend of the program, Bob Fitzgerald, also pissing off KD. So Nick, on all this, right? No drama with the Warriors. And then, and here's the thing. I'm not trying to make anything out of this. What I'm saying is that KD is sensitive. And so you're hoping that that doesn't come back to bite you after, you know, that side remark by Bob Myers, the general manager.
You're hoping. And I don't think it will, Hoodie. I think it's good fodder for what we're discussing, and for all the internet forums.
I mean, but this guy has a side. I mean, this guy he's got one of these shadow Twitter accounts too, just like the former general manager of the Sixers. You don't think that he's sore about that?
Well, and you brought this point up tonight earlier in the show, and we've all spoken about it for several years, and it doesn't get enough play in a general sense throughout the league. It's not just KD who's sensitive, Hoodie. All these players, all these coaches, all these executives, it is so rare where you don't have a player, a coach, or an executive who cares about what is being said about them or what is being discussed after a game or prior to some game. I would say on the whole, sure there are going to be exceptions, but on the whole, they all care, and they care deeply. So while I don't think it's going to impact any kind of negotiation or whatever KD decides to do here in the next couple weeks, it is worth noting. And it was a really uncomfortable situation that just didn't have to be. I mean, if you're Bob Myers, if you're Bob Fitzgerald, you're sitting there today, you're going, oh, why did we even go down that road? But that point needs to be hammered home more and more. It doesn't get discussed enough. all of these guys are sensitive, and they all know exactly what's being said about them in almost every case.
Chris?
I mean, Durant can't be that soft, right, guys?
You did hear the Simmons podcast with Jalen Rose recently. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I know. And he went off on Blog Boys. And I know the whole deal. Okay. I mean, yeah, Bob Myers, it was a funny joke, but don't you think that they can crack jokes like that because of the culture that they built with the Golden State Warriors, with him and Steve Kerr, and the way that everything is operated through Steph Curry and the example that he sets, and the fact that Klay Thompson is a guy that never talks ever. He doesn't complain about his role whatsoever. He just shows up and plays. And Draymond is the emotional leader that, like, part of it is, like, Durant is there. He's a little bit sensitive. He's a little moody.
Right.
You got to rub his ego. But then it's like, but, dude, we're going to make fun of you, too.
As you heard, I guess you heard what I heard, like what Jalen Rose said about Durant. And I guess Bill Simmons knows him better than we do because he's done a podcast with him. Like, KD thinks that he's lesser than anybody else in the league, even with a championship. He thought that a championship would kind of solidify his greatness. Now, all three of us know how great he is. We already know he's great. He still doesn't think that he's getting the respect, I don't believe, because he went to the Warriors. But it was his choice, though. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's getting crushed for the decision he made a couple summers ago now. I mean, still.
Yeah, but when you look back at it, guys, if he's sitting there with four or five titles, when it's all said and done, and he scores 30,000 points in his career, I mean, there is going to be the argument to be had at some point. I know everyone loves this LeBron-Jordan deal, and that's the only conversation novice basketball folk can have is Jordan-LeBron. Mm-hmm. But there is going to be the serious conversation at some point down the road between Durant and LeBron. I mean, he's going to have the numbers, and there's a good chance he's going to have more titles than LeBron.
Nick, let me ask you this quickly because we are running short on time. I want to ask you about a few of these players when it comes to free agency. Do you believe that Paul George will stay in Oklahoma City or will he go elsewhere?
I think he will go elsewhere, and my guess would be to the Lakers.
Okay. Chris, do you feel the same way? I know you've been hearing that maybe Russell Westbrook's going to keep Paul George in Oklahoma City. I don't see that happening. Do you?
Yeah, I don't see that happening. Nick, Jonathan, are we sure that the Bulls are not going to make a run for Paul George?
All right, let's not do that.
He's probably bouncing to L.A. But come on, the Bulls can use a small forward.
All right, this is not 9 to noon. All right,
there's a report Gar's job is in jeopardy. It's not
okay. Let me ask you about DeMarcus Cousins. Unrestricted free agent. Do you see him re-signing with the Pelicans, or what do you think is a good spot for him, Chris?
I don't see him re-signing with the Pelicans because I think what they found at the end of the season without him is the way that team needs to move in the future. Alvin Gentry did a great job having the team play some of the fastest tempo in the league and the ability to score and highlight what Anthony Davis does well. They need to keep moving in that direction, put shooters around Anthony Davis and Jrue Holiday. And I think DeMarcus Cousins will leave, and what will probably happen is he's not going to get the max deal from someone, so he's going to probably have to take like a one-year prove-it deal, and that could almost be anywhere. I mean, look at any of the teams that have cap space, Dallas, Atlanta, I mean, Philly. There are a bunch of teams that are going to have cap space that could offer someone like a one-year prove-it deal, and then that maybe go that way. You know, maybe Phoenix as well. There are a lot of teams that are going to have some cap space where they may not land the big dogs in free agents.
Nick, let me ask you about two Rockets with Chris Paul, unrestricted free agent, 18 points a game for the Rockets last year, and Trevor Ariza. Do you expect either or both to re-sign with the Rockets?
I would expect Chris Paul to be back, Cody, because I think he knows that they are, in theory, close to a title. I don't think that Daryl Morey's going to give him a max deal. Like we keep hearing that he wants. With Ariza, I mean, if you're Houston, I know how important he was to what you accomplished, but you got to have money to sign other guys, too. So I would think that Ariza will have plenty of other suitors and may go elsewhere if the if the money is higher. I mean, Clint Capella is another guy as a restricted free agent you've got to clear up some room for. So they've got some serious decisions to make. But if you were betting between one or the other, I would bet that Paul would be back and Ariza would not.
Chris, have you narrowed down what the Bulls will be doing in the draft at seven?
I mean, has anyone? I think what everyone is kind of hoping for is that if Wendell Carter Jr. falls to the Bulls, that's going to be the easy, safe pick. I don't think Bulls fans want to take Michael Porter because they're worried about the back. God help us all if Trae Young is the selection at seven, because I think we all know that there is some love for Trae Young within the local Chicagoland area near the Advocate Center. And I'm not sold on Trae Young, and I think
it works out tomorrow.
Have fun with that, Nick. But I think what would work best for the Bulls is Wendell Carter Jr., the center from Duke. He's 19, 6'10", good wingspan, and he can score a little. He didn't get the opportunity at Duke to score like Marvin Bagley did because the ball was always in his hands. I think that would be a nice pairing with Markkanen. Can we stay away from the Trae Young? Nick, can you do your magic tomorrow?
Look, I've already told Gar what I think on that topic.
Please report that Gar's job is in jeopardy. It's not.
He knows full well where I stand going into this workout tomorrow, guys. But, I am, out of all the years we've done this draft show, and last year I felt the same way because you thought, what are they going to do? Which direction are they going to go? I've never been more interested in what happens because, of course, they don't have all the control being at seven. They got to wait to see who falls or who doesn't. So they need to hit on this pick badly. Any Bulls fan out there knows that, but I'm with Chris. If Wendell Carter is there at seven right now, a week before, I think he's probably the guy that they're taking.
Okay. I'm going to do some more studying, obviously, tonight, and I'm thinking that they're going to probably see Mikal Bridges would be so Bulls to have the tread on the tires and have that junior kind of the great program. I can't believe he's on the board, Nick, Bridges. I will say because the medical staff has changed a little bit with the Bulls, they will look at Michael Porter. I think that will be a guy that's at seven that the Bulls cannot pass by because there's a guy that could have been a number one draft pick. So I think that they look at Porter at seven for right now.
I still believe that as far as Porter goes, Hoodie, on top of the back issues, the knock on Porter is that he's not the best teammate. He's not the best guy to put in your locker room.
Culture guy.
And so we'll see what happens on draft night, but that is not like some serious secret around the league. That was something that
culture
that executives have known for a while, and that's something that when you sit down and talk to Porter, you're gonna have to figure out for yourself.
Not smiley enough, Chris, clearly. Not smiley enough.
Well, come on, guys. We know how it works around there. You got to be a culture fit. We're building a new culture, this hot new culture with Hoiberg at the helm.
That's right. That's why they're taking DiVincenzo at seven.
Oh, no. Internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone.
Hey, yo, Jay Hood. Talk that barbershop talk, dude.
Good evening, Jay Hood. What's up?
You know what's up, pal. Not too good the last couple of games for the Cubs. What stands out about today's game?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, these last 2 days, they haven't had many chances. More so yesterday than today. They did have a few today. You know, it's just a confusing offense. I get why everyone's all over the map about it, because it is strange. This whole idea that when the bases are empty, they get guys on, they're good at, you know, walking and getting their doubles and even singles, whatever. But when they get in scoring position, it just shuts down. And it really should be the opposite, because when you get guys in scoring position or the base is loaded, the pitcher has to come into you, right? They don't want to be walking guys when there's already men on base. And yet the Cubs don't take advantage. So, just weird. I mean, I'll give you an example today in the fifth inning. Tommy Lestell, good contact hitter, right? First time up, he singles with nobody on. Second time up, he drives the ball to left field. Granted, it was an out, but hit it hard to left with nobody on. Third time up, first and second, two guys on, he strikes out. Next guy up, Anthony Rizzo hits a weak ground ball to first, inning over. That was the best scoring chance. So, it's just this weird offense that has a lot of good in it, but some bad in it, and it goes towards, again, guys on base for the most part. And why they can't hit with them on, I just don't know. Nobody knows.
Where do you place Chacin's performance versus others that you've seen against this Cubs offense?
Well, I like Chacin. He's not a no-name just because he played in San Diego. He had some good numbers. The Brewers are smart. They picked up a good guy. He's soft-tossing, and the Cubs aren't great at that. You know, think of change-ups and things like that. Well, maybe that's one reason why Chris Bryant sat today. He's not good with those soft-tossers sometimes. In general, the Cubs aren't. Joe talked about that afterwards. So he kept them off balance. I mean, it's kind of a cliche, but it's the truth. And, you know, it was a sunny day, no clouds. Miller Park roof open isn't always great with the sight lines and all that stuff. Very sunny, shadows and all that. So neither team hit much. Lorenzo Cain did all the damage off of Mike Montgomery. Two hits and a walk, one of them being a home run, and that was the difference in the game. So they hit their homer, and that's the other issue. The Cubs aren't hitting homers. So as they transform to a more dynamic offense, you don't want to forget about the home run, especially in these tight games. If you're not going to get four hits in an inning, Jay Hood wouldn't mind a solo shot, tie things up, and move on from there. But they're not even hitting homers. So it's just a weird offense in transition. Some days it looks dynamic. They're third in the league with opposite field hits. But they're 10th in home runs. That's not really what we know about the Cubs. Mm-hmm. So they just need to be a little bit better in all areas, the little stuff and also hitting homers. But then again, you're asking them to be a perfect offense. That's not going to happen.
Jesse Rogers covers the Cubs for ESPN.com. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, and Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. I thought Montgomery was sensational. Did exactly what he needed to do, four strikeouts through six. That's a quality start. He just was on the wrong end of it because there wasn't enough offense. And as you wrote not too long ago, it just seems as though that, you know, a guy like Montgomery is doing the job more so than what Yu Darvish has brought to the table so far this season.
Yeah, he's been great. And he would have stayed in the game. I think it was 70-something pitches through six innings. If they're leading 1-0 instead of trailing, he stays in the game. And who knows how long he goes because the leash is off of him. He's stretched out enough to go over 100 pitches. But he has been absolutely fantastic. Four really good starts in a row. 13 total hits, seven of them came in one game. So he's given up two hits in each of the other three starts. I think total of three walks, just great. First pitch strikes for the most part. Unfortunately, he got behind Lorenzo Cain, and that's when he had to come into him, and he gave up that home run. But I can't see how they take him out of the rotation if they had to make that decision today. They don't have to make it today. They're going to wait it out a little bit. But at some point, they're going to have to make that tough decision. I can't imagine him coming out if he keeps pitching like this.
Jesse, we talked when the series started that it seems as though like the Cubs are the, you know, the Golden State Warriors and the Brewers are the Cavs because of how well the Cubs have played against Milwaukee. But what do you think of the way that they performed here in this series? And do you think that can garner momentum for Milwaukee moving forward?
Yeah, I think it was a little silly. Even maybe I was buying into the whole idea that they just can't beat the Cubs. They're in their head. I mean, you know, it's a little silly. It's baseball. Anybody can beat anybody. Going 8-1 against a team is unusual, a good team. So maybe they were bound to win a couple games as the Brewers just did. But you know me. I like the Brewers. I always have. They're resilient. They're more balanced on offense than they ever have been. They're better in their starting rotation than people think. It's a little underrated, and that's without Jimmy Nelson. Josh Hader, obviously great. Knebel's finding his way back from his injury. I have no problem with the Brewers, and they've got a little mojo that like the Cubs have had over the years. So the addition of Yelich and Cain has just been that spark that they've wanted at the top of the order. I think it was the fluke was the Cubs winning 8 out of 9, and not the Brewers winning the last two here. So you kind of don't want this to go to the final week of September, but you have a feeling it's going to at least go deep into the second half in terms of this race. And then, you know, the Cubs had their easy year. 16 was their easy year. Most of the time, it's not easy for anybody. And I think we're seeing it again this year.
Okay, I couldn't wait to talk to you tonight because of the Cishek-Dunsing back and forth with them going to the outfield, depending on the hitter that they were facing. So I'll ask you this. How many warm-up pitches should you get if your Cishek, who has a third of an inning, goes to left field, brings in Dunsing, and they go back and forth. How many warm-up pitches should you have if you return from the outfield?
Yeah, that's a good question. In the speed up the game era, not many, right? I don't know, a couple, three. I don't even know what the rule is there.
I mean, I don't think you had many.
Not many, maybe zero. Yeah. Maybe zero? I don't know. But it shouldn't be many, because that's going to slow down the game if you're going to treat it like a new reliever each time, which it's not. So I would say not many. I don't even know how many did they throw. Did you know?
It was more than like – it's just like maybe one or two. But the reason why I ask you the question is because clearly Council was not happy. He went out there a couple times to say, okay, so how many warm-up tosses did they get? If C-Sheck – if for those who didn't watch the game, C-Sheck was out there for a third of an inning, and then Madden goes out and brings Dunsing in but puts C-Sheck in left field – and then bring Dunsing in for a third. Then Dunsing goes to play left field. Then C-Sheck comes back to the mound. And so I think it was maybe just one or two, if maybe max three between both of them. But clearly Council was not happy with it.
Yeah, of course not, because he wants every edge he can get. But the rules state that you do get some. I mean, what if C-Sheck's out in left field for seven batters and then comes into pitch? I mean, you know, anybody, you're allowed to. They're switching positions. You're allowed to warm up. So I get Council's argument. There's got to be a rule in the books, I would think, that addresses this. If a pitcher goes to play the field and then comes back to pitch, but maybe not. Maybe because every time it's going to be different in terms of how much time between mound, you know, between times he gets back on the mound is there. So maybe there is no rule in place, and he gets a set amount. So I can understand Council arguing it, but I also can understand the pitcher's needing to warm up again.
But I know you like that, because that's Madden. That was him trying not to suck.
What I liked is that it worked. It worked out perfectly. What I didn't like, though, he preserves this one-run deficit but leaves Chris Bryant on the bench in the ninth inning and lets Chris Jimenez bat instead. I don't get that. I know Bryant's been struggling, but still, it's Chris Bryant. Here's a chance for him to get out of a slump. And he's the former MVP, and you play the odds. If you're going to max out the eighth inning with that defense, max out the ninth inning and throw Bryant up there. One swing can change everything, and he gives him the complete day off. I completely disagreed with that.
I gave you just the lead-in, the easy lead-on, try not to suck, and you still couldn't plug your book.
I had to go off. Well, one day left. We're sending out Father's Day books tomorrow on Thursday, so you have to email me in the next 12 hours, jrogersbook@gmail.com, to purchase a signed, personalized copy to Dad. I'll write whatever you want. You're the best dad in the world. You're the worst dad in the world. Whatever you want, I'll write it. But you got to email me right away so we get it out to you in time for Father's Day. Of course, you know, you could send it next. We could send it next week and be late. It's only Dad, right? You can send it next week. It's not, you can't be late on Mother's Day, Jay Hood, but you can be late on Father's Day.
And no question about it. And last thing, so after Thursday, it's going to be a three-game series against the Cardinals. Well, that you already have a marquee matchup. That's a playoff kind of matchup here with Lester against Waka. What are your expectations for the Cubs against the Cardinals, especially with the Cubs limping in the way they played offensively the last couple of games?
Yeah, you'd like to think they win the series, because just like against the Pirates, they have Lester and Hendricks going. And the way Lester's throwing, I would never bet against him at the moment. So a little tougher against Milwaukee. You had 3, 4, and 5 going, though really wasn't their pitching that let them down. It was their offense. So I think the Cubs jump back on the horse. I will say this, St. Louis, last I looked, 22-12 against the Central Division. Maybe that's a coincidence. As we just saw with the Brewers series, the Cubs were 7-1. And now they lose 2 out of 3 against Milwaukee. So maybe St. Louis is due to lose a few against the Central. But you're right. It's a good, solid matchup, second place versus third. Three night games in a row, Sunday night baseball, looking forward to it. Three series against the Central Division. So far the Cubs are 3-3. So obviously these three games kind of determine whether it was a good week and a half or not.
My friend, as always, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Jay Hood, I've been listening all night. Great show. Talk to you soon.